Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hello and welcome back to Castle Rock Critical in our 3-episode marathon.
Woo!
That is finally coming to a close, apart from all the editing that needs to be done. So technically, my marathon goes on.
As does mine.
I'm joined, as you can hear, by Emma.
Hello.
They're dropping like flies, dropping like flies. We lost Lucy and we've lost Gareth. It's just us two, the true Stephen King fans.
Yeah,
to go through episode 3, The Ties That Bind.
Kingship Troopers.
Yeah, it's I have to say, there's going to be spoilers and there's going to be a lot of Easter eggs in this one. But Emma, what were your thoughts on what I thought was an excellent episode?
I bloody loved it.
I was
on the edge of my seat.
I just can't get over the pace of the show at the moment. It is like 100 miles an hour.
But it's amazing though, because, and we were talking about this an hour and a half ago, in the last record for episode 2, in that season 1 took its time, and season 2 is doing this wonderful thing of getting, like, just getting us going. Like, there is no, it is relentless.
I don't know.
I like it.
How there is going to be 7 more episodes worth of material. I literally am sitting there thinking, okay, so where do we go from here? Like, where do we go? And that's quite exciting in a way.
Yeah, it is.
But it's also a bit terrifying to me. I'm just like, this is going bonkers, isn't it?
I think they would only go this quick if they've got something really fucking good to show us.
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought that the Easter eggs in this one were gorgeous. They were spectacularly done. They weren't corny. It was just fantastic. And I have to say, I was gripped the whole way through. I mean, you and I just watched it together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we said a couple of things, kept shouting out, oh, this is from that, this is from that.
But yeah,
basically
yeah.
Just hooked the whole way through. It was slick. It was exciting. It was scary. It was edge of your seat. It's a 5 bleep, mate.
Oh, boy, howdy. 5 blueberries.
Now, for anyone who hasn't listened to the other 2 episodes that we've recorded for this, or any of our other Castle Rock Critical or Fan Critical stuff, we rate everything on a blueberry scale.
Yep.
Very simple.
Yep.
It's from 0 to 5. 0 is the worst. 5 is the best. And there can be no halves.
You can't half a blueberry. We don't allow it. It's a harsh but fair scale.
It is nonsense. So I have just given this a full marks 5 bloob.
You know,
Lenny, what do you think?
I'm going to echo the 5 bloobs.
Are you?
It could be the gin talking.
You haven't had that much gin. I have had gin for the first time in about 17 years.
It could be a combination of that, my severe tiredness, and only seeing the episode once. Usually, we like to watch the episode twice and report back on it, but we wanted to get the content out to you guys as soon as possible. So it's quite fun doing it this way. We did it last year, and it's quite fun just to kick the season off. I don't know if it's a combination of all those factors, But the last, don't know, 20 minutes of this episode, I really loved.
Yeah.
Lizzie Kaplan in the last 20 minutes is fucking phenomenal.
Blew me away.
Blew your blueberries away. It was so good. Just she is just absolutely killing it this season. I'm not saying anything against our boy Henry last year, but as a protagonist, he, bless him, was very one note for a lot of it. And it took a while for him to start, like, you know, really expressing himself towards the end of the season and getting those memories back of all the things that happened and blah blah blah. But Lizzie Kaplan is just fucking the range that she's having to work with here.
She's hitting this with 100% straight.
I'm loving it, and more of it, please. I don't know how she can get better from this. It feels like she's just on a downward spiral. By the end of this episode, you're kind of just like, well, you're fucked. You're absolutely fucked.
That's it.
You know, so I loved it. 5 bloobs. I just love the start of this season. And I think having the Annie Wilkes story is really helping it, right?
Yeah, really does. I think grounding it in Annie Wilkes especially, but also the kind of Salem's Lot lore, I think is a great way to do it. I loved season one, and for me, it's one of the best seasons I've seen on TV.
Yeah, 100%. The listeners know we love it, even though the ending was a bit jarring for some people, and that's a consensus across the board.
Yeah.
We defended it, and also criticised it at the same time. You know, we could see the pluses and the minuses, overall, great season. Well directed, well shot, well edited, sound design's amazing, acting was very good.
Yeah. But
I can't fault that.
I think season two has something very different about it, which is that, yes, season one was amazing, and it's for, I think it is either for someone who's never watched Stephen King or someone who fucking loves Stephen King. Mm. Whereas season two, I think everybody has seen Misery. Most people know Misery.
Yeah, well, it's an Oscar-winning film.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know Kathy Bates, James Caan, you know that story.
Yeah.
So I think this opens it up a bit more, but what it does is it gives you the opportunity, I think, to hit things a bit faster, get that tempo up and running. I'm loving this.
Yeah.
And I also, what I really love is when we all get to watch it together.
Yeah,
I really
nice.
Enjoy that, because it means that, and I love doing that immediate reaction thing.
We do, that is something that, you know, isn't a regular thing that we get to do, and sadly will be something we might be losing a little bit of. You know, but it has been quite nice to watch these episodes all together. It reminds me of our Game of Thrones watches.
Aww.
And they were very fun, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard that content as well. We had live reactions and stuff.
Yep.
And it was great to have this little marathon and go through these three episodes. But let's jump into the plot, you know, go through some of the intricate details, and then the Easter eggs in King Corner.
Sounds good.
Before we do, quick advert, you know the drill. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this 3-episode marathon today. We really do appreciate everyone that's listening. If you're listening for the first time, please do subscribe if you're enjoying it. And, you know, if you want to, you can throw us a little review on iTunes. We do like them.
We love a review. Sometimes we read
them out. We've got loads of really nice ones, and it is absolutely delightful when I just get a little, you know, notification of my day. We've got another review. I'm like, oh, lovely stuff. If you are watching HBO's Watchmen, which has started off fantastically as well. It's a great time for television at the moment.
Mm.
We have started a new podcast called The Watchmen Watchers. We are on iTunes and Spotify. We covered the pilot episode this week. It's excellent. Please do go check that out if you're into high-budget superhero drama. It is brilliant. Just to say as well, you can, of course, sponsor us on Patreon. It's patreon.com/fancritical. Go on there, have a look at the tiers. Any questions, feel free just to email us, and that's at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com, and we do want your feedback, so let us know your feedback, please, everybody. Right, so we kick off the episode with a couple of things. At the end of last episode, we saw Ace Merrill out the back of Annie Wilkes's car.
Hanging out the back of it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
and she gets out to check if he's there. She sees him. She runs inside the house, and you know she's a bit frantic. And the camera's doing that really cool, like looking at her frantically, psychotically sort of thing that we talked
camera.
About. The Misery sort of thing that we talked about, but this is a bit more extreme. You know, the same way that Misery was shot. And you're like, and we questioned this, and we'll come on to it later in the episode. But I said, he's definitely dead. But I genuinely, I don't know how I feel about this. Even though I love the episode, this is my one problem with the episode, and we'll come on to it a bit later. But she's been a bit psychotic in the house. She can't believe it. We cut to Abdi saving Pop. Did you like that? Do you like the fact that he saved him?
Yeah, I do, because I think that actually, ultimately, there is some kind of connection there. Whatever it is that he's done that he doesn't want, you know, Nadia to know or whatever, I think there is some connection there regardless, because Abdi wouldn't have the life he has without Pop. And correct. Also, I don't think he wants that guilt on his shoulders. So I am glad.
I don't think he's a bad guy either. I don't think he's like, you know, fronting up a bit and trying to act like the head of this, you know, group of people. And he has to show face, and he can't just like admit his feelings towards Pop. And later on, they have a conversation, obviously, where he says he doesn't want to see his sister sad. But I also think in deep down, he doesn't want to, you know, hurt his father, essentially.
Yeah. And I think also it would be a crying fucking shame if we lost Tim Robbins in episode three.
Well, this is the thing. So when Ace died, you know, I'm doing the little quote thing.
Air quotes.
I was like, oh, that's mental that they killed him off straight away. It's just like kind of Ward and Lacey, right? Like in the first season.
Yeah.
But you saw flashbacks of him and stuff. And I was like, okay, maybe we're going to get that. But hey, it looks like I was wrong. So if anyone dies, don't worry about him. They'll just come back. So it's absolutely fine.
Yeah. It's not like it's George R. R. Martin writing this, is it?
Oh, God. Well,
good old JJ.
Some of his characters come back too. But spoiler warning.
Only in the books.
Apart
from one.
Yes.
But no, I liked it. I think it was good, and I wanted more of that backstory. I want to know what this secret
is. I'm sure we're going to get several more flashbacks. There's already been about six in the first three episodes.
Well, episode two was quite flashback heavy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, I hope we get more of that relationship, and it looks like it's developing quite nicely from a viewer perspective anyway. That seems to be one of the most sane parts of the show at the moment. The rest is absolutely bonkers.
Fact, shit, crazy.
A bit of reality here, talking about it not being bonkers. We have Joy and her new gang of friends channeling the body, literally, physically channeling the Stephen King short story, The Body, or Stand By Me, as you people who don't read Stephen King might know it as. You know,
hey, want to go look for a dead guy?
Yeah. Hey, want to go look for a dead guy?
Guys, want to see a dead body?
And the ironic thing about this, and I know we don't need to talk about it in King Corner because it's obvious here, but it's just funny how they're like, yeah, that guy Ace Merrill, we need to go find his body. And it's funny because obviously he's the central bully character in The Body. So
the irony of it is amazing.
It's quite a nice flip.
It is. And actually, when they go sort of like tromping off through the woods with their hash brownies,
I loved
that
it.
We later discover, it was fantastic. It was so Stand By Me.
It was so Stand By Me. And you mentioned Stranger Things when we were watching it. Just the idea of getting away from the madness of this crazy storyline that we've got at the minute. I mean, I can't get my head around the storyline at the minute. There's so much going on.
You look rather perplexed, Len, to be honest.
But then there's just these four kids just going on a little adventure. And I like that, obviously, with some hash brownies.
Even better.
I wouldn't recommend never have taking a hash brownie before and then taking one on a rowboat in the middle of this giant lake, Castle Lake.
In fairness, I don't think Joy knew it was a hash brownie.
No, bless her. She's very innocent.
Should we talk about this whole lake bit?
The lake was, for me, a bit of a shocker, because what did we hear, Emma?
Schizma!
We got old Schizma.
How good was that, though?
I love it.
Harking back to season one and that whole that noise, and you, as soon as you heard it, the both of us were like, Schizma, Schizma.
Yeah, I was like, straight away, Schizma, oh my God, Schizma. And then they kept going back to it, and I was like, okay, is this going to be a central thing that they're going back to, or is this just a little thing saying, hey guys, like I said in the previous episodes, I want these little pieces of information fed to us from last season.
Yeah. So, and they do, and they talk about, you know, oh, that Warden Lacey, his head's still in here
100%
somewhere.
100%.
Never
love
found
that.
It.
Yeah. Right. That is very good writing. Like,
gold.
I think the writing last season was very good. I think the execution of the finale was slightly off, but I think generally the dialogue was on point. And I loved the way that they sowed the Easter eggs last year. And this year, they're doing it again, but they're giving us Easter eggs from season one, and
which
I'm liking that.
Which is what makes it so much better as well, because people who've not seen season one will be like, well, who cares about that? I mean, why would you watch this if you hadn't?
But,
but for everyone that has and was so excited to see this, just getting those little nuggets is just great. When Joy jumps in the water and she comes back
up
and
goes, like,
there's such a weird noise under there. I was like,
that.
Oh, yes.
But I was also kind of like, I said this to Emma when we were watching it, I was like, oh my God, what if she comes up and she's in a different time period?
That would have been brilliant.
I was sitting there going, because we've seen the witch flashbacks in the promo material for the season. And I was sitting there going, how are they going to fit that in? Maybe just flashbacks, obviously. But I just thought, it's crazy stuff going on in this episode. I was
proper
like,
exciting.
You know, he's a bit bonkers, isn't it, this whole season?
It's nutty.
I can't.
But I like it.
Yeah, I do like it. But I'm happy we saw the schisma. Do you think it's going to relate in any way, shape or form to the actual season? Or do you think that's just a nod for season one viewers?
I think, well, I mean, I don't really know what they're going to do with the next seven episodes, considering the roller coaster we've just been on for the last 3 hours, 5 hours. But I think it's just going to be a nod. Maybe something will happen at the end.
Maybe.
But I feel like it's just a nod to season one, and I like that. It doesn't have to be this big thing. You know, it might be, we talked about this before, about the parallels, about like what we did 4 or 5 seasons, and the fifth season pulls everything together, American Horror Story type thing.
Yeah, that to me feels like they should have done the schisma last, you know, because that would have then really tied it all together. You could have gone, well, you see all those stories, they all existed in alternate universes or something, but I like the idea that they're giving us the information. Mm. I hope we get more schisma stuff.
It's also
nice to sort of have these kids just enjoying themselves on Castle Lake. Like, Castle Lake is horrendous from my memory, and the woods, you know, everything that happened there, and Henry disappearing, Molly getting shot last season in that weird alternate timeline.
Oh, shit, yeah.
All that stuff that was going on. Like, it's just nice to have a nice sunny day, you know, just hanging out with the schisma. Just literally hanging out the schisma.
Yeah, no need to worry about it. It's just funny noise under the water.
Funny noise under the water.
It's just the hash, man. Don't worry. Just the hash.
That could be it as well. Annie visits the Marston house after seeing Mel. So she goes back to the Marston house.
She's looking for a necklace, isn't she?
I think she's looking for the necklace, but she's also curious, I think, about what happened. Mm. Because I think she's questioning her own reality. And we said this at the end.
Now.
Yeah, 100%.
Not mine, I mean hers.
Well, always question your own. You said it at the end of last episode. She's an unreliable narrator.
Yep.
So when I was like saying how, you know, I don't believe that she's actually seeing Ace Merrill, is because she doesn't believe it, right? So I was thinking, okay, I'm with you on this. I think you are going a bit psychotic.
Mm.
Turns out, you know, I was wrong, fine, and she was, you know, wrong. She actually was seeing him, but I think she's doubting that her very sense of reality is slipping away from her. Well, here,
I mean, wouldn't you in this situation, like, if you were seeing a guy that you remember killing with an ice cream scoop by pounding it into his throat,
yeah, literally out the back of his throat, may as well have been
unbelievable,
yeah,
and you started seeing him walking around, wouldn't you fucking lose the plot?
I mean,
I would have no idea what was real and what wasn't.
Yeah, it's
let alone if you already know that you're suffering.
For me, her visiting the scene was something the season's done very well at the moment, which is using the horror tropes to a very good extent. Now, she's walking around this dilapidated house, and you just see this really, and I'm not saying the guy isn't like, he's a good nick, this boy, right? But the way they shot it and the way he was just like loitering the back of shot, it reminded me of something very alien and like something just very scary.
It was the posture.
Yeah, posturing and walking around behind her in scene. And I was like, who the fuck is that?
It was sort of that, like, quite lithe but slightly hunched back thing, which is very kind of...
It was fucked up.
Well, I mean, it is. It's alien, isn't it? It was completely mental. Yeah. So then he appears and it's like, oh, it's that Somali guy from last episode.
The guy who got axed to death.
Yeah, axe in the head.
Head axed and body axed. Just completely fucked.
Absolutely fucked. And he's eating... What is he eating, Len?
He eats a whole egg.
See,
protein. I mean, look, I told you he's a good nick. You got to eat your eggs in the morning. I'm just saying, if you want to build some muscle...
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
4, 5, 6 eggs. Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know.
Disgusting.
Quick and easy, if anything. But this was for me when I was like, all right, okay, what is this in relation to? Now, we're saying Pet Sematary, vibes maybe, but there's this goo on them. What's the goo?
I don't know what the goo is, Len.
Well,
it can come out of my clothes.
Well, God, Jesus.
I'm joking. That's definitely not happening. This was the point where I went, fuck, maybe we aren't getting vampires. Maybe this is like, and it made me think
vampires.
Of things like, you know, when like, bugs put you in a cocoon.
Yeah.
Well, I can't think of a film where that's happened. Oh, Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit.
The Fly.
The Fly, yes, great heart back to that. And it felt very kind of bug-like.
Yep.
To channel Lucy. Bugs.
Bugs again.
Bugs.
Bugs again.
And that was when I just became baffled because I cannot think.
Well, it's something I haven't read.
Maybe a bit of Tommyknockers?
Maybe, but that's
a push.
That's more like culty indoctrination via that signal green thing.
Oh, there is some gooey stuff in that.
Okay, fine.
But not really to this extent. I mean, that is stretching it a bit. I cannot think where this is going. And I like that because I thought I knew exactly how this season was going to play out.
Yeah.
If it wasn't an egg, it could have been a completely peeled pear.
It was definitely an egg. But yeah. No, I this guy's alive. Meryl's alive. Later on, there's some other people as well. And it feels... We've just covered Stranger Things, and it does feel a little bit like, you know, how they... The Flayed or whatever they were called, you know, yeah. the sort of soldiers of the Mind Flayer. And it feels kind of like that invasion of the body snatchers kind of vibe. That's what the goo reminds me of, because in several iterations of body snatchers, you know, it's very gooey, cocoony.
Well, it is that cocoon thing, isn't it? It's gross.
Yeah. And that to me doesn't really feel like Stephen King. It doesn't feel like him. It feels like I'm watching some other like sci-fi pastiche or something. I don't know, but I can't wait to find out more about it.
I am also only halfway through Salem's Lot, so maybe that's how vampires keep their victims. I don't know.
Gooey bathtubs?
I'll check. I'll let you know when I finish it next week, listeners.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, do some Googling. I like the sense of unknown.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. I'd be really interested to see what Gaz and Lucy think of this episode.
I'll be fascinated to see I'm fascinated to see what John thinks of this entire season so far. when he gets around to watching it, I hope we can get him on a few podcasts this year. But I'd love to hear his take on it. You thought Gaz was grumpy. Wait till John gets it. So Ace Merrill, as we just said, is alive and he goes to see Pop Merrill.
Out of fucking nowhere.
He looks, you know, fresh as a daisy.
He looks a little bit wonky, let's be honest. Vacant, I think, maybe is the
vacant
word.
Yeah, but this is what's confusing me about this reanimated corpse situation, right? This scene, he's vacant and saying weird sentences, and Pop even goes, "Why are you talking like that?" Cut to the scene literally a minute later. He's driving down the road, listening to classical music.
Drinking a bottle of red wine.
Drinking a bottle of red wine out of the bottle and making a police car pull over and stop him.
Hey, at least it's a bottle, not a box.
Well, fair. But why, what do you think the difference is in the personality here? I don't get it. Because if it was Pet Sematary, which it felt like at the start when he introduced himself to Pop Merrill.
Yeah, when he came to the room, it felt very much like when Gage came back from the dead.
Yeah.
Like, they come back not the same sometimes.
Oh my God, that kid's terrifying.
Fucking horrible.
Sometimes dead matter.
There you go, thank you. But it almost feels to me a bit kind of parasitic, do you know what I mean? And that there's something that's taken over and
body
possessed
snatchers
his...
Vibe.
Yeah, that possessed his body, but is learning. So he knows he can't just stand there and be weird and make weird faces.
Yeah.
He has to now adapt and become more normal, otherwise people are going to catch on.
Yeah.
And it feels like an evolving parasite.
Well, he feels like he was doing these actions on purpose to get the cop.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, he's trying to build some sort... He's trying to build some sort of, like, army. I don't want to hark back to Stranger Things
again.
Bug
army.
The bugs. It's the bugs. Could be the bugs.
Makes me keep thinking of Starship Troopers.
Yeah, it's all over the place in my head at the moment. I mean, I need some time to digest.
And that isn't just
episodes.
The gin. You've only had three.
Well, strong gins, though.
Are they?
Fairly. Mm. But, the Merrill situation is extremely interesting. He even arranges an estate agent viewing, there. And gets this estate agent over.
So she's chatting away and she's like, mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I know the history of the house, blah, blah, blah. You all got a preview of that from me last week.
Yeah, we told last week. Episode. It was literally an hour and a half ago.
I don't know who I am anymore.
Marathon.
And then he says to her, so he's like, do you have any children? Oh, yeah, once.
Yeah.
So you can still have children then? Sorry, that is either the worst pickup line of all time
terrible
or you're trying to like breed an army here.
It did feel like breedy.
Right, so just as a reference, and I know you're currently coupled, if you have become single again, Len, don't ever use that as a pickup line.
Got it.
Because it ain't going to work.
Okay, right,
and if
noted.
It does, you don't
let
want
me just,
that.
Let me just write that down. Yep, got it. Good,
yep,
cool. Set.
Remember.
It's weird, isn't it? Gooey men have been, you know, reanimated. And that is not a euphemism in any way, shape or form. And he's asking about breeding with this estate agent woman.
That's like going up to a woman in a bar and going, are you still of childbearing age?
I mean...
What is wrong with you?
Some people are just very efficient. And that's fine. If that's your jam, that is absolutely fine. So he's recruiting some sort of army. And whilst this crazy storyline is going on, Annie has broken down into a psychotic break, essentially.
I really felt for Annie.
It's interesting, isn't it, to sympathise with Annie Wilkes. It's such an interesting
it's
situation.
It's quite a challenging feeling, isn't it? I sympathise with Joy because
I feel sorry for her. I mean, she's been lied to her whole life, sheltered. She's finally waking up to the world, as it were. And
her poor mother's had a psychotic break.
Her mother's had a psychotic break, killed someone with an ice cream scoop, and then thinks that he's reanimated, as far as she knows. So she's like, yeah, I am going to sedate you, and I am going to tie you to the bed.
Seems perfectly logical. It's the contingency plan.
Yeah.
You know, if she has an episode.
I think it's
an emergency. I think it's a solid plan.
It is a solid plan.
Very solid plan.
And this was very interesting in a way, because it was a reverse misery for me. Like, we'll talk about some other stuff in King Corner, but it was just interesting seeing Annie Wilkes in this position. It's like they're taking some of the things that we, you know in Stephen King lore, and they're just subverting them just to flip them and say, hey, what if this happened? And hey, what if this happened? And
what if this happens and that's what makes her do what she does to Paul Sheldon?
Well, that's it. I mean...
But what if it's just completely different? I don't know. It's fascinating.
And we also don't know if Paul Sheldon's already happened. We don't. You know, I'm not saying this story of hers is actually completely different. Yes, there may be certain characters in it that are the same. Maybe her ex-husband, who we know that she didn't kill. Mm. And you know, maybe some of the victims she had at these different hospitals that she visited. But this whole story seems completely different to me. It feels like we're, you know, either 20 years behind where she was when she killed Paul Sheldon, or she might have already done it. And who knows? She said she's done some terrible things.
Or
she's
she
done
might
bad
never
things.
Do it.
Exactly.
This, different reality.
This could be a redemption story of this character. Mm. We could see her... thrive and become something else, and that's interesting to me as well. I don't think it will end that way. I mean, Castle Rock's very depressing. Nothing really ever happens that you want it to do.
I don't think she's having a happy ending here.
No, doesn't seem that
way. But this is quite a protracted series of scenes, and I really perversely enjoyed them for a lot of reasons. So when she wakes up, she's like, oh, it's just an emergency.
Mm.
The pills aren't right, and Joy says, until you take your pills, I won't let you out. I won't untie you, that's it. Mm. So you see her, and you can tell she's not taking these pills, right? 100% mm-hmm. You can see she hasn't swallowed.
Well, it's your standard. It's exactly what Sheldon did. All Sheldon did in Misery. He hoarded all of the pills, remember, and then tried to put it in her wine. Then she knocked the wine over, and that cracked me up.
Poor Paul.
So it's the same sort of thing. She was never going to take the tablets. She believes strongly that they're bad for her.
Yeah. I'd be really interested to go back and pause on the scene where Joy is reading a book to Annie and see if it's like something like Misery's Revenge or whatever.
Well, we said in the previous episode that when she was listening to one of her audiobooks, it sounded very Misery-like, and we'd put money on the fact it was a nod to Misery 110%. Yeah. We did see some books in her possession, and I imagine this sounded very Misery-like as well. So... I would put money on it being Misery, to be honest with you. And she said she liked reading to her father. We know she murdered her father. Very interesting stuff. Mm. Well, we know in our timeline, we know that happened, so...
Yeah. But this all then fucking escalates, right?
It gets very bad, yes. I would say escalation is a very timid word for it. The way in which she tries to free herself from these bonds... It makes for great visual horror and storytelling, because you're getting this very visceral, desperate attempt to break the rope, but at the same time, blood everywhere, cuts on these white bed sheets, rain, thunder outside. It's very, you know, disconcerting. The discombobulation of her shoulder, you know, when it pops out of her socket.
I can't do dislocation.
Yeah.
It makes me feel really unwell.
But that just goes to show how fucked up she is at this point. She's in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, she's lost the plot. But she's also desperate to save Joy, right? Because she believes that banging on the door is Ace Merrill.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what really... I don't think that's what starts her trying to break free, but that's what panics her in the end.
Mm.
And, you know, she's just completely lost the plot.
But it's not Ismail, it's the doctor. Just asking if she's all right.
Yeah, and to be honest, if I was Joy, I'd be like, no, she fucking isn't.
Yeah, what is Joy thinking?
Come and help,
Joy,
please.
Should be like, nah, I desperately need some help here.
Yeah, I think the thing for Joy, and I really do understand this, is that she's probably not quite ready to admit to the outside world. Yes, she might have admitted it, and you know, she said to her mother, and we'll come back to this, said to Annie, like, tell me the truth, stop lying, tell me the truth, all you ever do is lie. Maybe she's not ready to stop the outside lie, only the internal one.
Yeah.
In their little world.
That's very fair.
Because she does. So she asks Annie to stop lying and to tell her the truth. And she starts telling a story about her father, right?
Yeah. And that is the story about the father chasing them is not true. As far as I'm concerned, it's all also a lie. We know that, well, from our timeline, we know that she didn't kill her husband, and we never know why she didn't kill her ex-husband. He left or cited her for mental illness, essentially.
Yeah, and abuse, I think. Mental abuse.
And he was never killed. So our understanding, or my understanding of it, is that, you know, that is not the reason they're running. The reason they're running is because she's obviously killed other people along the way. We saw at the start of the season that to be the case, i.e. her father, or, you know, we said it could be a Paul Sheldon, could be someone like that.
Mm.
It's interesting.
I suppose it also depends, because in the story of Annie Wilkes that we know, she doesn't have Joy.
Well, exactly.
So I suppose we have to...
And we still don't think that Joy is hers anyway. Like, I mean, I think...
Well, you don't, I do.
Okay, interesting.
I do. I think that she is the result of abuse.
Okay.
I think she's a baby from abuse.
Okay,
and I think that Joy killed the man that was abusing her and
Jesus.
The father of the baby, and that's where Joy came from.
Fair enough. There we go. Heard it here first.
I'm really fucked up, though, so that who
is,
knows?
That is very true.
But I think, like, it is also really hard to know. Maybe she just nicked the baby from somewhere.
Mm. Well,
who fucking knows?
We're going to find out so much more. The episode ends with Joy seeing that Annie is almost free, blood everywhere.
Mm.
She is looking an absolute state here. If you walked in on that, you'd be like, what is going on here? That is mental. So Joy clearly goes, yeah, I'm out of here. See ya. Out the door.
Where's she gone, though?
Probably to her mate's house. I'd go to my mate's house. She's got mates now.
That's true, she has got three friends.
Yeah, and she knows where they live in the little huts around them.
Yeah.
Annie runs outside, pouring down rain, blood everywhere all over her face, sees bearded hat ghoul man that she's been seeing with the typewriter noise.
Yep, either Paul Sheldon, daddy boyfriend, baby daddy.
If we have no idea. And then, you know, as she's trying to eat her rat pills to try and calm herself down, because, you know, the pills that she didn't eat normally, like just getting them out of a rat, eat those pills. She hears a door close, stands up, bearded ghoul man's in there and says, you know what, you're going to end up killing her, essentially.
You were always going to hurt her.
Jesus, brutal. And the episode ends.
Fucking, like, I mean, that, even that 30 minutes discussing that was a roller coaster of emotions, watching it.
What have we just talked about in that 30 minutes? It feels like a blur, but then I also feel like we've talked about, like, body snatchers, vampires.
The Fly.
The Fly. We talk about fucking
Starship Troopers.
Oh, everything. Just so it's all going on. Goo, lots of goo. Too much goo. Eating eggs whole.
Or pears, who knows?
Estate agents and how, you know, if they can have children or not. You know, there's so many things we just covered in that.
It's a magical
time
for you.
33 minutes. So the bearded ghoul man.
Who do we think he is?
Well, it's either her father
mm-hmm.
or Sheldon. Now, or a writer. It has to be a writer. It has to be.
Because of the typewriter.
Because of the typewriter. I mean, yeah. It would make no sense to me. Now, what would be logical maybe is if her father was a writer.
Yeah.
Or father wrote stories and, like, she killed him whilst he was typing or something. I'm just saying that's an option. But otherwise, it has to be Sheldon or it has to be an author.
I feel like Beardy Ghoulman is Joy's dad.
Okay.
Regardless of who he is, whether that's Annie's father or it's a Paul Sheldon or a writer or whoever it is, I feel like that is Joy's dad.
Okay. Well, you know, watch this space. It's all going on. And you can let us know your thoughts theories, because we need lots of theories. Ours are, you know, a bit
drunken
and tired, and we're in a bit of a tiz, as they say. So you can let us know. You can email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. That's fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. And let us know your theories and any Easter eggs we might have missed. And speaking of Easter eggs, it's time for King Corner.
I'm innocent, Red. Just like everybody else here. The house is burning.
Hi, Georgie.
I'm afraid I have a tendency to turn up the heat.
Red rum! Red rum!
Creepy Gary! Creepy Gary!
You flop!
Hello, and welcome back to King Corner. It's the time where I take charge and talk nonsense about stuff I've read about Stephen King and in Stephen King novels.
And we try and link it to stuff, sometimes very successfully.
Sometimes a little loosely.
Sometimes it's garbage, but here we go.
So, we talked a little bit earlier about when Ace Merrill gets his estate agent to show him around the house.
Yep, and how if she can have kids or not. Big time.
Yep. And we've already mentioned a couple of things here, very kind of body snatchers, gooey kind of weird shit.
Yeah,
Strange Things. A little bit kind of Tommyknockery, Strange Things-y.
I can see the Tommyknockers link, but I'm not a fan of it.
No, I'm not. I think it's pretty loose. But we also, again, it kind of comes back to that whole, you're not quite normal, you're going to come with me, Pet Sematary thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which we're going to keep going on about. But previously in the Marston House, Annie is in there. And we talked about the guy that's walking around behind her in the corridors.
Egg-eating man, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know his eggy man at the time.
Yeah.
Does that remind you of any other recent adaptations of Stephen King?
Gerald's Game.
Yeah.
And the weird figure that loiters
out. Creepy Bone Man.
I mean, he is terrifying. When I first saw that, imagine, right, being in bed, and there is that illness that people get, sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
And I've watched a couple of documentaries about sleep paralysis.
Scary, isn't it?
Some of the stuff that people see during sleep paralysis is genuinely terrifying. Like, the old lady is obviously like one of the most famous ones. It's just like, it's this old woman just on top of you screaming in your face and crawling up to your bed.
Len, I live on my own.
Yeah, sorry.
Fuck me. Yeah. I'm never going to sleep again.
So when I saw that in Gerald's Game and I saw that bone man standing there, I was like, oh, fuck, she is, you know, she's lost it. It's like sleep paralysis or she's like just given up. But no, he was real. And so was Egg Scary Eating Man.
Eggy Man.
Eggman.
Eggman. DC or not DC?
Yeah, well, that's it.
I'm never going to have a good night's sleep.
Don't
ever
get sleep paralysis. I've never had it, but there
are. No, but now I'm just going to have nightmares about an old lady crawling on top of me and screaming in my face.
The legend is the old crone is the, what they call
it. I'm going to ask you to stop talking about this.
Okay, yeah, let's stop talking.
Yep.
Google it.
Stop.
Google it, people.
So when talking kind of Pet Sematary Ace, as we were a little minute ago, when he comes back and he goes in to see Pop, and Pop's like, where the fuck have you been? I thought you were dead. Where has he been, Len?
Oh, just my favourite place in Maine, Derry, of course. So obviously It 2 just came out recently. Me and John covered that. If you want to check that out, it's in this in the channel. So It 2, quite good. Not as good as It Chapter 1. But Derry, a very, very famous place in Stephen King lore, and obviously the home of Pennywise and, you know, the kids there.
Another fucking creepy thing that's never going to get out of my head tonight.
Yep.
Now, we talked a little bit about this. We've mentioned Gerald's Game. We've mentioned Misery. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk a little bit more about when Annie's tied to the bed, right? Because what it seems to do is flip between these two things. So when we first see her, she wakes up. Her hands are tied to the bedposts and she's sort of panicking and freaking out. It's very much like Gerald's Game.
Yeah.
When she first wakes up, she's like, shit, I'm after she's kind of passed out. Shit,
and she had
that's
a dream.
It.
And Yeah.
I'm tied to the bed. This is awful. But then it kind of flips back to Misery with the whole kind of giving her her pills, reading her a story, taking her food. And then it switches back to Gerald's Game again.
With the glass.
Yeah. But this is worse, I think. I mean, not worse than the degloving.
No way.
But for me, it made me feel I watched this, whereas I haven't watched the degloving.
Yeah, don't watch the degloving.
I don't want to watch it.
We talked about it last episode. Don't watch it.
But, the whole, like, getting shards of glass in your mouth and, like, she's fucking bleeding everywhere.
Yeah, it's brutal.
It was rough, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Gerald's Game, like we said, is heavily influenced this season. I don't know what they've obviously just love watching that on Netflix. And they're like, oh, shit, that's cool. Let's keep doing that.
Let's keep degloving poor women's hands.
Disgusting.
Did you spot, Len,
a
nod to the Green Mile?
The rats? The mice?
Yeah. The little mice walking along the wall.
Mr. Jingles.
Mr. Jingles.
Oh, Mr. Jingles.
And then they died. But apart from that, I thought it was quite a nice little nod.
Yeah, the rat dies in the Green Mile. I thought Annie Wilkes would pick it up, give a little kiss, and it would be alive
again. Come back to Earth again.
And Mr. Jingles would still be alive
today.
In the future. Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Jingles.
Love that.
Now, we've also got two references to Carrie, which are your last Easter eggs here. Can you name me either of them, Len?
I know one. One would definitely be her running out of the house at the end with blood. Or she looked like Carrie, you know, the soaked hair, the red blood on her face.
Absolutely.
Looked like Carrie, you know, after all the pig's blood stuff. Ooh. Gross. But the other one, I can't think of off the top of my head, so you're going to have to tell me.
So in the middle of the episode, before the whole let's sedate you and tie you up in the bed thing, Joy hugs Annie, Annie hugs Joy, and Joy sedates her.
Mm.
Which, and Lucy mentioned this, I think, in episode one and episode two, about the kind of troubling mother-daughter relationship being very akin to Carrie.
Mm.
Well, after the whole pig's blood running down your face, all the things going shit in Carrie, her mother sedates her when she gives her a hug while they're praying.
There you go. So
what a nice nod. I mean, not, it's fucked up and mental, but...
You know, when I watch these things, you know, the Stephen King lore, or even The Simpsons, for example, or something, I sit there and think they've done so much that they're always just referencing themselves. You know what I mean? There's just so much Stephen King stuff out there that, like, even if they were to go like, oh, yeah, so she just sedates her... Do you reckon they even know that's like a Carrie thing, or they're just like, that's just...
Possibly not.
You know what I mean?
I'll be honest, I didn't completely... It gave me that thing where I was like, I recognise that, and I know it's definitely something from something.
Yeah.
And then I checked it, and I was like, oh, yeah, of course, I remember that.
It just makes me laugh. It just makes me think, like, you know, obviously Stephen King has such a vast library of stuff, and then films, and we've covered so many of them in our retrospectives, hilarious or no.
Yeah,
and
Tommyknockers.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like... Sometimes they just must be referencing just by luck and pure chance, I think.
And I think that's the challenging thing about King Corner is that sometimes I sit there and actually I had a list of about 20 things that cropped up and I was like, oh, that's from that. Oh, that's from that.
Yeah.
And actually probably it's just normal stuff, but you just think of it as, oh, you know, obviously a nod to it. So you have to really whittle it down.
Yeah, some of them are very obvious. Like the body in this episode was funny and a nice twist on it, and the misery and the Gerald's Game twist.
Yeah, and the Pet Sematary and you know, all that kind
it's
of stuff.
It's all there. But it's just funny how we read into it sometimes. But I love it. King Corner's my favourite part, so
I really enjoy it. And I think that the surprise of it as well, I think, is quite fun.
I just love watching the show and then noting them down. Or like shouting them out when we're watching them together. That one.
Have I missed any then?
Don't think so.
Cujo, needful things.
No, yeah, just keep shouting
out. The body.
Out. Yeah.
The body? No, the body.
I think we're good. But thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening. If we have missed any Easter eggs, as I said, let us know. Email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. And if you're listening for the first time, please do subscribe to this channel if you've enjoyed it and send us a review on iTunes.
Yes, please.
We very much like getting those. We have earned some rest. Actually, no, let me think about this. I've got 3 podcasts to edit and release to you guys in the very, very, very near future. So I'm not going to bed anytime soon. You can, Emma.
I've got to do the washing up first.
Yeah, well, I can guarantee you the editing is going to take longer than that. Some of the garbage we've been talking. But no, thank you everyone for, you know, joining us on our sort of delirious, boozy...
Journey.
Marathon and journey. And we'll be back next week, you know, covering the show normally. One episode a week.
Episode 4. Episode.
That'll be nice, won't it? I can watch it twice.
Me too.
I can also, like, actually write some very detailed notes.
Yeah.
And not just ramble.
You.
No.
Thank you, Len, for all of your efforts today.
No, thank you too. And thank you for listening to us, everybody. We will be back next week and have a lovely week and enjoy the episodes.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.